This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. Since before the war in Iraq was launched, Americans have been assured by the administration that intelligence proved that the war was necessary. Based on intelligence reports, the administration said it believed that Iraq had a stockpile of weapons of mass destruction. Now there are questions about whether those weapons do exist, and President Bush is calling for a panel to investigate the intelligence the administration was given. What's changed in a year? Is intelligence to blame? And what do we understand about how intelligence is used to determine policy? A bit later in the show, we'll discuss concerns about antidepressants and kids. This hour, investigating intelligence. Join the conversation. What are your questions about the president's intelligence investigation? What would you like to know about how CIA information is used? Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. We're joined now by Dana Milbank, who's a staff writer for The Washington Post and has been covering this story. He joins us from the offices of The Post. Welcome to the show, Dana.
Thank you, Lynn.
What do we know so far about the mission of this proposed intelligence panel?
Well, we don't know the specifics in terms of the members or exactly what the scope will be, but the White House has made clear a couple of things. First of all, they have said that they want it not to look just at Iraq, which is an obvious failure, but they'd like to look at Libya and Iran and North Korea, areas where the intelligence community may have understated the risk. So they're trying to balance the obvious overstatement in Iraq against these others. They've said it'll be nine members. They will be. It will be bipartisan, although we don't know exactly how bipartisan it will be. It appears to be an open question whether it will be able to investigate what the White House did with the intelligence information. Did they exaggerate the intelligence that was given to them, or will it keep its focus squarely on the intelligence gathering and analysis?
Well, just with regard to Iraq, understanding that this panel is going to be looking into intelligence gathering in other countries, what exactly will the panel be looking for, do we think, or can you speculate on what it might be looking for with regard specifically to Iraq?
Well, it's not all that much of a mystery. In fact, the CIA has had an internal investigation of this. We've had a couple of congressional investigations going into this now. It's very clear that the, as David Kay said, almost all of the Iraq intelligence was wrong that was used as the allegations about weapons of mass destruction to make the case for war in Iraq. So the intelligence, the material for the inquiry is essentially already been gathered by the CIA, the other intelligence agencies, the congressional investigations. It's now the job of whoever is named here to go through this one more time and make judgments about what can be done to transform the intelligence community. It should be noted that this is not all. This is a rather frequent occurrence. It was only about 8 or 9 years ago that we last did this sort of probe of the intelligence community and how to shape it, and nothing much changed after that.
And what was that? Remind us of what that panel was about.
That was a commission, I think it was in 1995, by Clinton to just take a broad look at the intelligence.
Okay. How did this particular panel come about? I mean, last week it didn't sound like President Bush really wanted to do this.
No, and probably in his heart of hearts, if we can guess, he still doesn't want to do it. It's interesting that neither he nor his top aides have acknowledged that there was anything wrong with the intelligence. They're sort of implicitly acknowledging it by having this commission. They were opposed to the commission simply because they would prefer for the issue to go away, but realizing that the issue is not going to go away, that they'll keep getting hammered by the Democrats through the election year, they said, well, wait, maybe this David Kay testimony gives us an opportunity here. If we do name this commission, it looks like we're getting out in front of this. And in fact, the commission, as it is scheduled now, will not report until 2005, which is after the election. So the president, as he heads to the November elections, can say, I've designated this committee. We have to let them do their job. And that essentially can let him off the hook as to whether the intelligence was right and whether it was acceptable what he did with the the intelligence.
And there are some critics who say the president is really just using this panel for just that aim, to avoid any of this controversy until after the election.
Well, yes, so the Democrats have a bit of a problem of being careful what you ask for. They were going around demanding this sort of an independent investigation, and the White House said, okay, here we have one. And it's not unreasonable for an investigation like this to take that period of time. So the Democrats now have to argue, first of all, that the scope of the investigation should be expanded to include the White House, and they can demand an earlier reporting, but they're just not going to get that.
Now, didn't Secretary of State Colin Powell, in an interview with the Washington Post, didn't he say that it's possible that new intelligence information, that it might have affected his decision to go to war, or the decision he made about going to war?
Yes, he had a meeting with reporters and editors here yesterday, and that was indeed a story. I didn't write that story, but that was his assessment. I think he's tempered that a bit. It often happens with the Secretary of State that he sometimes comes out a little bit too honest or a bit off message, and then he sometimes reins that in a bit.
But he did say that it's possible that he might have come to a different conclusion.
Right. That's as we reported this morning.
Yeah. Now, when will we find out, possibly, who's going to be on this panel? And have any names been circulated yet?
There are names floated. It's interesting in the commission business in Washington. There's sort of the usual suspects of former senators, current senators. There's actually this whole sort of cottage industry of commission sitters. So it's not all that much of a mystery who these folks are. We have a whole bunch of former CIA directors out there, a whole bunch of current and former senators from intelligence committees. A couple of them that would be obvious would be sort of the Lee Hamiltons, the Bob Kerrys. At the moment, they're tied up on another commission that's looking into the September 11th attacks.
All right. Let's see if we can get a call in before you have to leave, Dana. John in California. Hi, John.
Hello. Yes. I've been surprised that there hasn't been much mention in the media of a group that, if I recall, a story was broken by the Washington Post, maybe also the New York Times, that at the direction of Bush and Cheney, Rumsfeld set up a group within the Defense Department to comb over intelligence that had been turned up by the CIA and military intelligence, looking for evidence of Saddam developing weapons of mass destruction, where the CIA had not found that indicated by the original raw intelligence. Also at the time, there was a saying within the White House, just because you can't prove something or can't find evidence of it doesn't mean that it isn't true. And with that type of attitude, one could believe anything.
Dana?
Yes, I haven't followed that particular element of the story very closely, but Doug Feith at the Pentagon has indeed been doing his own group analyzing intelligence. The CIA is really just one of a whole web of intelligence agencies. The administration's answer to that is they talk about the National Intelligence Estimate, which is all of the intelligence gathering agencies in the government, some from the State Department, the Pentagon, the CIA, and elsewhere, get together and sort of give their consensus. That's the document. So their defense would be that although there were some disagreements in that NIE, as it's called, that there was a consensus agreed that these weapons did exist.
Right, thanks. Just
if I could follow up very briefly, one other thing about the appointment of a so-called independent commission that gives me some concern. If we look at the way the September 11th commission has been handled, the White House has drug its heels on giving information to them that they've requested and have refused to set up dates for administration officials like Condoleezza Rice to testify, thus delaying the commission's work. And then when the commission asks for more time to complete its work, the White House says hands off, and congressional Republicans obviously don't want to extend the time. So the White House delays their work until the clock runs out. And certainly if they do that to this commission, will we ever see any reasonable results from it?
All right. Thanks for your call, John.
Thank you.
Dan, if you just want to answer that?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a possibility here, but there are two differences. One is it's already expected to go after the election, so there's no reason for the administration to try to accelerate the pace of this. In fact, they'd like to extend it as long as possible. The other difference is a lot of, as I was saying, a lot of this intelligence that this commission will be reviewing has already been gathered by the congressional inquiries and the CIA itself. They probably won't need as much access to the president's daily briefs, which is the highly classified daily intelligence briefings the president's getting that was the source of the argument with the September 11th commission. So it's conceivable that this one would have an easier road, but it is true that this does not guarantee that this commission will get to the bottom of it any better than other commissions and other inquiries have.
Thanks so much for being with us today, Dana.
Certainly.
Dana Milbank is a staff writer with the Washington Post, and he joined us from his office here in Washington, D.C. Joining us now from his home in Simi Valley, California, is Gregory Treverton. He's a senior policy analyst with the RAND Corporation in Santa Monica. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I guess I'm wondering, how could the intelligence community from both the U.S. and Great Britain have been so wrong with regard to weapons of mass destruction in Iraq?
It is a fascinating question after the fact. It seems to me the elements of the failure are clear. It was a kind of a perfect storm of intelligence failure, where you had, on the one hand, a very strong set of prior beliefs in intelligence and in policy based on what Saddam had done before, based on what he had before, that he still was in the weapons of mass destruction business. Second, and this is the part that I think will surprise the American people some, there wasn't, or doesn't seem to have been, much new information, or at least not a lot of new information. So you get strong prior beliefs, not much new information after the UN inspectors left in 1998. And then the third, this curious campaign out of ignorance or perhaps willful by Saddam to, in effect, convince the world that he had what he no longer had. And that, I think, played into people's strong beliefs that he had this stuff, he'd been interested in it, he must still have it, even if there wasn't much new information to confirm that.
You know, one quote I saw recently from a person described as a diplomat of the old school was that intelligence is not fact. If it was, it wouldn't be intelligence. I wonder if you can explain that a little more.
Well, I think of it as intelligence is not fact, it's not evidence, and it's not policy. It's not fact because, as in this case, the most important questions in some ways begin where the evidence ends. What intelligence was doing, badly it turns out, was making inferences based on past behavior without a lot of new information. So it's certainly not fact. It's not evidence because it seldom can be conclusive enough to make a case or to prove a case. And obviously it's not policy because it's really only one input into a decision that's influenced by a whole range of other factors, I think. After the fact, more recently, the president said that pretty explicitly, that there were lots of reasons the administration wanted to do in Saddam Hussein, and weapons of mass destruction were one among many.
You know, I think a lot of people may think, well, when we're talking about intelligence or intelligence gathering, that there's really people out there, whether we have the old spy idea in our mind or not, who are actually out there gathering the intelligence, actually physically seeing it or physically seeing papers. And you're saying that's really not the case, that a lot of this intelligence was based on assumptions.
Well, it turns out it was in this case. I mean, obviously, we would like to have had more information. We would like to have had good sources, good spies out there working for us. We didn't have a diplomatic presence, and we were not very good at doing espionage outside of diplomatic presence, and therefore we didn't, as far as we can tell, have much by way of human intelligence. What we had was stuff that other countries gave us, notably Britain, harder to judge in reliability, therefore. We obviously had all the technical sources, signals intelligence, intercepting signals, and imagery, looking at pictures and other images. We had lots of that intelligence, but the problem is many of these, while a nuclear program is a big thing and can easily be seen, stockpiles of chemical or biological weapons especially can be well hidden, as we found.
You're invited to join the discussion. What would you like to know about how the Congress, the White House, and the intelligence community share and use information? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. And, of course, our email address is totn@npr.org. British Prime Minister Tony Blair is following suit with President Bush. He says Britain also needs to look at intelligence gathering, but not another look into the death of weapons scientist David Kelly.
We do not need, in my view, an inquiry into the political decision to go to war. That's a matter for Parliament, government, and the country in the end. But it is important we learn the intelligence lessons.
Gregory Treverton, in terms of investigations, how has Britain's investigation into their intelligence compared with that of the United States?
Well, so far what's been impressive, you always think of Britain and Europe as much more secretive than we are. They, in this fact, have been much more open. The Hutton Commission, a special inquiry there, has really made public lots of information about British sources, espionage sources, about conversations in number 10 and around the prime minister. So they have had a pretty impressive investigation in the context of the poor scientist's death of what happened.
I wanted to talk a little bit more about what we were getting into before the break, and that is the way that intelligence shapes foreign policy. And it's particularly important to the foreign policy of the Bush administration, is it not?
I think it has been. They obviously did have a number of reasons for wanting to take care of Saddam Hussein, but I think they decided that the weapons of mass destruction issue was the best bumper sticker, the one that was the easiest case to make both with the American people and with the would-be coalition partners. So they tended to run with that one and in some sense tended to, in my view, make the error of converting intelligence into policy. Obviously, they had lots of reasons to do what they did, but the one that got most attention was WMD, and that's led us to the debate we're now having.
Some in the intelligence community have said that the intelligence on Iraq was sent with plenty of caveats that the administration chose to ignore. So who finally is responsible for interpreting intelligence and then making the decisions about how to use it?
Well, the ultimate decision, obviously, is the administration. The decision about whether or not to go to war is their decision. The question of how intelligence was used, manipulated or not, that I think is going to be a central part of the American investigation. Prime Minister Blair may be able to keep it out of the British investigation, but I think it'll be central here to what extent were the caveats and qualifications that accompany the intelligence lost as it moved up the daisy chain? To what extent did people make much flatter assertions than the intelligence warranted? Those will be, and I think always are, but particularly sharply in this case, those will be very much a part of this investigation.
Can intelligence agencies be pressured or at least feel pressured into giving an administration what it wants to hear?
Well, intelligence agencies pride themselves on telling truth to power, on occasionally sticking their finger in the eye of the policy community. But they're like everybody else, that we all, I think, in some sense, like to please our bosses, and therefore there are pressures, I think, subtle and not so subtle. That'll be another part of the inquiry this time. To what extent were those pressures operating, and did they have visible manifestations, either in what intelligence said or further up the line, how it got presented by more senior officials, both to the administration and by the administration to the public?
We are talking about how intelligence helps to shape foreign policy. Our guest, Gregory Treverton, he's a senior policy analyst at the RAND Corporation. If you'd like to join the discussion, the number is 1-800-989-8255. Let's take a call now from Teresa in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. You're on the air.
No, thank you. I guess I have more of a comment than a question. My husband fought as a soldier with the 101st Airborne in Iraq and recently returned in June because he was getting out of the military. But when he was leaving for Iraq, he was told by his command, he was an officer, but he was also told by his commanding officer that they were going in for chemicals of mass, weapons of mass destruction and chemical weapons and this and that. And what my question or my comment is, how do we justify using our soldiers and exploiting our soldiers in such a way so that they even believed that this intelligence was correct? And that was their main reason in going in and putting their lives on the line.
All right. Thanks for your question, Teresa.
Uh-huh.
Gregory Treverton?
Yeah, obviously, I don't know what was said to particular soldiers. I think, again, that it was a policy decision based on lots of different factors. And unfortunately, I think for the reasons we talked about earlier, the WMD issue tended to predominate. It would have been nice to have a more open-ended conversation before the war about whether the set of other things, Saddam's nasty behavior toward his people, the possibility that one day he might be a real danger, justified going to war when we did. On that people obviously differed, it was something that tended to get preempted by this conversation about WMD, and I think that was, particularly in retrospect, unfortunate.
I think Teresa's question goes to an issue which is really a political issue for President Bush, and that's a question of trust that people may now be questioning why we went to war and not trusting what the administration is saying about its reasons for going to war.
No, I think that's right, both for the administration and to some extent for intelligence. People, I think, will be understandably somewhat less trustworthy of what intelligence says the next time around. All the more reason, I suppose, to have this deep investigation.
If our foreign policy is so dependent on intelligence, how do you ensure that it is going to be accurate? Is it up to providing what is needed for the shaping of foreign policy?
It's a big issue. I think that intelligence does need to be fundamentally reshaped in all sorts of ways. Some of them were demonstrated by the Iraq affair. We spend the bulk of the money we spend on intelligence, whether it's $35 or $40 billion a year, on technical collection, on intercepting signals, taking images, and very much of that is driven by the needs of warfighters. We want to help those soldiers, like the caller's husband, locate foes and be protected. So that's a very open-ended mission that's driving a lot of current intelligence collection and intelligence spending. The question is, on these big policy questions, how can we do better? Are we doing enough, paying enough attention, developing the kinds of expertise, the kinds of conversations across expertise that enable us to do better? In this case, what's obvious is nobody was taking very seriously before the fact, either in the administration or intelligence, well, what's the case that they don't have weapons of mass destruction, that they actually have destroyed them or let them disintegrate over time?
We are talking about intelligence gathering and foreign policy. If you'd like to join the discussion, the number is 800-989-8255. And now let's go to Pat in Eugene, Oregon. Hi, Pat.
Hello. I'd like to ask about other sources of intelligence and information besides covert sources.
And go ahead.
Mainly, I'd like to ask about, it's my memory that the weapons inspection program sponsored by the UN was restarting and had perhaps restarted in the months before the war, and that the inspectors had possibly gone in. They were on the ground. There were reports issues. There were sites searched. Is that the fact?
Oh, that is a fact. Yes. No, I think in some senses, Iraq is a kind of an old-fashioned issue in that we're dealing with a very closed society where secret information mattered a lot. But even there, as you say, the cooperation with the UN and the UN inspectors was critical. And over time, the United States provided more and more, in effect, intelligence to the UN to try and help them target their search better. Other issues in other places will depend, it seems to me, much more on information that isn't secret, that may not be immediately available, but it's out there, that's available in torrents on the web. There, the problem is it's a very varied in reliability, and the problem is, to some extent, authenticating, verifying, and checking it. But it is a very different kind of intelligence problem than the Cold War intelligence trying to use secrets to find out about a very secretive enemy.
Thanks for your question, Pat. Joining us now from his office in Royal Oak, Michigan, is Jim Marcinkowski. He is a former CIA case officer. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon.
Jim, do you think President Bush is right to investigate the CIA?
Well, he certainly has to look at the process and what went wrong here. My issue or disagreement with the president would be the type of commission he intends to set up. He's going to appoint the members himself. It's not going to be independent. It's not going to be bipartisan. And we have an expanding mandate that not only includes weapons of mass destruction at this point, but it also has been expanded to include Libya, North Korea, and Iran.
Are you concerned that the intelligence that was gathered was not handled well by the administration, perhaps even misused by the administration?
I think, in the words of 7 or 11, perhaps the facts were stretched here in this particular case. But I think fundamentally we have to look at intelligence collection. We collect intelligence in the sense that it's in the process, it's an ongoing action. intelligence that's relied on by the federal government to make decisions is rarely 100% accurate. There's certain levels of confidence that are affixed to the information, and you make decisions based on the information that you have. It's never perfect. You always want more. But the real question here is, what level of information was given, and was that relied upon to enter into a war?
Yeah. An investigation like this, how ultimately might that affect intelligence gathering in the future? Is it likely to strengthen it, or could it possibly make people more timid in terms of what they report or in terms of the way they couch their reporting?
I don't think you're going to get much of a change in the way information is reported. If you're on the ground as a case officer, you're reporting the facts. It's not couched in any terms whatsoever or to fit anybody's definition of what the needs may be. What you get is what you get. Obviously, people rely on that to make their decisions, and they can rely on the fact that it's secret. No one else knows what information they have. You can hide behind that and say, well, I was relying on this information, but the real question becomes, what type of information and what level of confidence did you have in it, and what decision did you make as a result of that? So ultimately, in the area of intelligence, you can always improve the collection process, but really this boils down to how it's being used. In this case, how it was used by the administration.
In order for you and perhaps other members of the CIA to feel, using you as perhaps someone who can speak for them, but in order for you to see, feel that this panel is really credible, has done a credible job, what would you have to see that this panel has really looked into? How widespread should this investigation be?
Well, actually, this whole issue started with weapons of mass destruction. If you expand that mandate to include other countries, other issues, now you're starting to refocus this on intelligence collection capabilities, and that's not what this should be about. The mandate is expanding. The haystack is getting larger. The larger the haystack, the harder it is to find the needle. Consequently, you probably won't get a result until sometime after the election. These things are purposeful, in my estimation. We have to get serious about what we want to look into. And every time you expand the scope, that you do not have an independent panel, that it's not bipartisan, that they're reporting to the president, or at least appointed by the president, your result will always be subject to criticism.
It sounds to me like you don't think that this panel is going to do the job if it's going to be the way it seems to be at this point, set up the way it seems to be at this point.
Well, the question becomes, what's the job? Obviously, we're in a political year. The electorate out there has to make decisions on what they see in front of them, whether it's the economy, whether it's in war, whether it's intelligence. This is a legitimate issue to get before the voters and understand under what conditions the leader of the free world is making decisions. That's a legitimate political item. The fact that this commission has been given a broad mandate, even Scott McClellan said they don't expect any results till after the election, tells me they're not very serious about coming to an accurate result.
All right. Well, thanks so much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Jim Marcinkowski joined us from his office in Royal Oak, Michigan. He's a former CIA case officer. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're also talking with Gregory Treverton, senior policy analyst at the RAND Corporation. Mr. Treverton, how does the proposed panel, that the president has proposed, how does it compare to other government investigations of this kind?
Well, as your correspondent said, it does have lots in common with other investigations. I think the in response to the previous speaker, it remains to be seen, I think, whether it will have the kind of credibility it needs. I think the president will decide that he won't be well served if it looks like it's narrow and partisan. So I would expect that that while the Democrats won't get quicker reporting, that I think it'll just take time for the commission to work. They probably will get a panel that looks credible and relatively bipartisan. At least I hope so. In that sense, it I think will look like lots of previous investigations that have been focused on particular events. I was a young staffer on the Church Committee, the first investigations of intelligence in the 1970s. That was very wide-ranging, but since then we've had looks at the Iran-Contra affair in the 1980s, and we've also had the Aspen-Brown Commission that looked specifically at intelligence, but not around a particular episode. I think the question for this commission is really I imagine it will produce a much better understanding, public understanding of what happened both in the intelligence community and between the intelligence community and the administration. The question for me is, will that be a basis for taking some action? So far, we really haven't seen much disposition on the part of either the president or Congress to really make hard decisions about reshaping intelligence capacity.
All right, we're going to see if we can get one more question in here before we have to go. Let's take a call from Brandon. He's on the road to Philadelphia. Hi, Brandon.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, go ahead.
I actually just, you really addressed what I wanted to talk about, and I wanted to do a follow-up question. For some of the people who are listening and aren't really familiar with the structure of intelligence gathering and how that affects policy, can you kind of shape out a really positive outcome, a possible positive outcome from this investigation in terms of restructuring intelligence gathering and how that gets played into policymaking?
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Brandon.
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you. No, it's again, a big subject. I think the two elements that I would focus on is how can we get better collection and analysis around inherently very uncertain issues. We face that with Al-Qaeda. We face that with lots of other issues. We got used to the Soviet Union, which was, however menacing, pretty conservative, pretty slow-moving. We now face a world in which there's much more possibility of dramatic change. So trying to reshape our analytic organizations to think much more nimbly, to put together very different kinds of teams, to put together sources in very different ways, that's one big set, I think, of issues that I hope the Commission will at least pose. The second, then, is how intelligence and policy relate to each other. And there, I think, not sure what the outcome would be, but we need to make sure that there is enough credibility to the process so that neither administrations nor intelligence lose the confidence of the American people in their interaction. Obviously, it's necessarily an interaction, and in that sense, it would be impossible to look at the intelligence without looking at what the policy community administration is doing at the same time. But trying to make that relationship tighter in many respects, which is what the world requires, without compromising the ability of intelligence to stand up and give unwelcome news.
All right, Gregory Trefethen from the RAND Corporation, thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Gregory Trefethen is a senior policy analyst at the RAND Corporation. When we come back from a short break, a new warning about antidepressants and children. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation, NPR News.